Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demonland podcast. My name is Andy, and the Demons 2025 season may have just come to an end. With only 5 wins from 14 games and just 9 rounds remaining, any hopes of salvaging the year are slipping into the realm of mathematical miracles. Joining me tonight to dissect another disappointing loss is George. Good evening, George.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening to all our faithful listeners. Good evening to Bin Man. Just to let everybody know, Andy apparently is sick as a dog tonight. A bit like the rest of us who are just as sick watching the same old problems again and again and nothing apparently being done to fix those very same problems. But we'll depend on our listeners tonight to highlight them to us.
Well, I must say that I was sick prior to the game, and certainly watching it did not help one a bit. Also joining us tonight, hopefully to provide some glimmers of positivity from the depths of sadness, is Bin Man. Good evening, Bin Man.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening, George. Good evening, Demonlanders. I mean, there were some positives, definitely. Like, there was some of the ball movement was excellent. I really, really enjoyed Fritter's game. That was the most up and about I've seen him for a long time. Our kids are going to be our future. Langford dropped away. He looked very tired in the second half. But, geez, he was amazing in the first quarter. I thought he was just brilliant. He's such a smart player. But it's I was watching the game and I was watching it at home. Normally I don't get fired up at home. I get fired up at the footy, absolutely. But people moving in next door must have thought that who is this crazy person screaming? And at one point I screamed at track when I forget what he did. It was, I don't even think it was that kick to Langdon. It was something else where I just was so frustrated. But it feels like, you know, we've seen this movie before, and I was thinking, well, I love my metaphors. It's sort of, the metaphor would be the Marvel universe, wouldn't it? And our grand final was in 21 was, what was it? The end game was that. And, you know, basically the same plot every week, reliable, every movie, I should say, reliable, get it done, good movie, actually. And then we win the flag in 21. And then we continued watching the same movie ever since. And like the MCU universe, it's progressively got worse and worse since then. And now it's just Drek, basically, isn't it? So it's, I don't even know what some of the Marvel shows are. But we live in hope for another endgame and a turnaround in our fortunes. And, you know, I think that the answers are pretty simple, is we just need to get, you know, over time, as I said last week, we need to bring in better ball users. It's really not much more complicated than that. There's a question actually about the midfield mix and about our players. And I thought it was really interesting actually to see who got subbed off, which was Rivers. And Rivers, when he's up and about, great ball carrier, clears distances with his kick, but he's sort of emblematic. He's sort of an example of what's wrong. You know, he's a butcher with the ball particularly when he's not fully switched on. And he looked a very bleak pitcher on the bench, being dragged. And yeah, we've just got too many butchers and not enough chefs.
Not enough fine dining chefs.
Not enough people handy with the kitchen knife.
Well, if you'd like to purchase a Disney Plus subscription, click this link. I mean, that's our.
Well, I can't think of. What about The Godfather? No, not quite The Godfather. It wasn't a Godfather 3, was it? So.
Well, each week I invite our loyal listeners.
What about The Karate Kid? That'd be more your speed, wouldn't it, Andy?
Yeah, no, don't mind some Karate Kid. I do ask our listeners to leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts, and we truly appreciate the feedback. And as a token of our gratitude, we'll give you a well-deserved shout-out on the show. Sweetly Sour writes, I started listening to the Demonland podcast during a tough patch, both for the team and in my own life, and it quickly became something I look forward to every week. It's not just about match reviews or dissecting game plans, though they do that brilliantly. It's the sense of connection that makes it special. The hosts don't just talk at you. They include you, taking questions from the fans, sharing thoughts from the forum, and debating topics we all care about. Makes it feel like you're sitting in the room with a group of mates who love the Ds just as much as you do. Andy, George and B-Man have helped me understand the game on a deeper level, but more than that, they've made me feel part of a community. I can't thank them enough for what they do. If you're a Melbourne supporter, whether you're a diehard or just finding your way into the game, give this a listen. You'll come away feeling informed, connected and proud to wear the red and blue. Thanks for that lovely review, Sweetly Sour. To keep the feedback coming, simply leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts, and we do give that shout out on the show. And if you follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you want to leave feedback, ask a question, post a comment, you can do that under our weekly podcast post, or just get into our DMs. We won't read your full name on the air. You can download and listen to the Demonland podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcasting apps. And in addition, you can watch and listen on YouTube. Just search for the Demonland podcast to find our channel and subscribe. And if you want to connect with other passionate D's fans, come check out our forum, demonland.com. You can sign up, join in the conversation with fellow D's fans from all across Australia and around the world. So it's completely free. You can post questions and comments for the show, but you can also get into heated discussions if you want with other D's fans about what's going wrong at the club. And if you're listening live, head on over to our chat room. There's a link in there where you can click on that you can click on, and you can connect with us via Microsoft Teams. That's how you can get a call in. You don't have to download any software for that, or it'll be a link on your browser or on your computer or your phone. Or just chat with us in the chat room, demonland.com/podcast. And we do go live every Monday night at 8 p.m. So if you want to catch a show then, come and listen, head on over to demonland.com and tune in. We are taking a break next week. I need the bye just as much as the team does. I'm going to get into the match overview. Melbourne's 2025 season is all but officially slipped into the abyss following a 25-point defeat to Port Adelaide at Adelaide Oval, with the Demons again falling short in a match defined by wasted opportunities, forward line dysfunction and defensive breakdowns. The story of the match was the career-best 7-goal performance by Port Adelaide's Mitch Georgiadis, who monstered the Melbourne backline with 18 disposals, 13 score involvements and 10 marks inside 50. Georgiadis was simply unstoppable, outpointing Daniel Turner early and later besting even the experienced duo of Stephen May and Jake Lever. His haul of 7 goals, 4 from 11 scoring shots, was the most by a Port Adelaide player this century. Despite winning the inside 50 count by 6 and holding swaying contested ball and clearances, Melbourne's inability to convert or find functional targets inside forward 50 told the tale. Their 9-goal, 14 scoreline mark, the 9th time this season they've kicked more behinds than goals. A damning statistics for a side that once prided itself on some forward half pressure and scoring efficiency. The opening half was defined by Cozzy Pickett's electric start and Georgiadis' dominance up forward. Pickett, fresh off signing a lucrative 9-year contract extension, justified the investment early with 3 first-half goals from 14 touches, including a brilliant smother-tap goal passage that lit up Adelaide Oval. He was the only Demon forward consistently threatening in the first 2 quarters. But for all of Pickett's brilliance, the Demons trailed by 24 points at the main break. A costly lapse in the second term saw Port pile on 4 unanswered goals in quick succession, sparked by a coast-to-coast counter-attack and compounded by Judd McVie's ill-disciplined strike on Georgiadis and Steve May conceding a free in a marking contest that gifted the Power their 9th goal after the siren. Melbourne showed spirit after the break, clawing back their way back into the contest with 2 goals to Bailey Fritch and a goal from Daniel Turner. At one point, the margin was reduced to just 5 points and the Demons had all the momentum. But again, execution proved costly. The Demons managed 3 goals, 5 for the quarter, missing gettable chances that would have put them in front. The most deflating moment came on the 3-quarter time siren when Jack Viney was penalised for 50 metres for time-wasting, handing Sam Paupepa a goal that pushed the lead back to 15 points and sapped Melbourne's momentum heading into the final term. The D's opened the last quarter with 2 quick behinds but failed to land a major blow. Georgiadis did, however. His back-to-back goals midway through the term effectively sealed the result and served as a brutal reminder of Melbourne's lack of a true key forward presence. And while Max Gawn fought valiantly, finishing with 23 disposals, 36 hitouts and 8 marks to once again be Melbourne's best, the supporting cast around him couldn't lift when it mattered. Christian Petrarca and Clayton Oliver had solid games without dominating, while Jake Bowie's 16 disposals provided a rebound but was under constant pressure. Melbourne's forward line woes were laid bare once more. Despite inside 50 dominance, they continually failed to connect with their forwards, lacking composure and structure. Port's Sava Radigalia thrived on these errors, intercepting at will and finishing with a career-high 13 marks, 5 contested in a commanding display. Bailey Fritsch and Jacob Van Rooyen finished with 2 goals apiece, but neither had consistent impact. Jake Milksham struggled to get in the game while Pickett was virtually unsighted after halftime, managing just 2 touches after the main break. Defender Judd McVie did face some scrutiny from the MRO for 2 incidents, but he's now been cleared of them. Both moments symbolise Melbourne lapses in discipline and composure. Melbourne enters the bye now sitting 15th on the ladder at 5 wins, 9 defeats, having now lost 3 straight matches and 11 of their past 14 dating back to 2024. Finals are a mathematical long shot, and with away trips to Gold Coast and Adelaide looming, the road doesn't get any easier. This match will likely prompt some soul searching about Melbourne's list profile and whether the legitimate key forward must be their top trade priority heading into 2026. Simon Goodwin has tried rotating combinations inside 50, including Petty, Fritsch, Van Rooyen, Melksham and even Turner, but none have provided a consistent threat. The Demons didn't lack effort, but once again lacked execution. The gap between midfield dominance and scoreboard impact remains far too wide, and unless it's addressed structurally and personnel-wise, Melbourne's window will remain firmly closed. Beer man, your stats.
The stats, well... interesting game. I, from a tactical perspective, I don't reckon Goody had a very good game at all this week. It was really interesting, you know, coming off of it. It's a, you know, as I've talked about a lot, regardless of any, you know, the high performance stuff in terms of where we're at in our program, they had an 8-day break. We were coming off a huge game that we threw everything in the kitchen sink at the Pies. Travel and a 6-day break coming into this game, it was always going to be a factor. So I was, it was really surprising. I thought just tactically, given that, I mean, maybe he'd argue that, you know, we had enough opportunities to win and therefore we could have, but it looked like to me that Goody decided to just go head to head in a running game and that, you know, that try and win a shootout. Defensively, you know, it's interesting. I don't know whether this is my imagination or it's just a sort of function of the last couple of weeks in particular, but so many more one-on-one contests at the moment, at least in the Melbourne game, so fewer opportunities for that sort of third man in, which exposes Lever a bit, I reckon. But yeah, I don't know that tactically Goody had such a great game. And, you know, when it did become a running game, I actually thought, I wondered whether they, in the third quarter, if we'd taken our chances and got the momentum, I was wondering whether we might actually, you know, whether the fact that they went with a running game, I was wondering whether that was confidence by Goody that we had the legs to outrun them. I'm not entirely sure that they were dominant and they're running away from us. I mean, from a neutral perspective, it was quite an exciting game because it was arc to arc. But, you know, he got a lot wrong, I thought, in terms of, I mean, it's always easy to be smarter, you know, in hindsight after the fact. But, you know, not having a May on Georgiadis right from the beginning was probably, you know, an error, wasn't it, in terms of how quickly he got hold of that game. There are a couple of other things that I thought of you, George, during the match, because for all of the talk about the success of Langdon last week, tagging Nick Dacos, you know, there wasn't, you can't really say Viney was hugely successful, although it was Butters, wasn't it? I mean, Butters was quiet in the first quarter, but, you know, he eventually got into the game and was a really influential player. Yeah, so that I thought that it wasn't, yeah, definitely wasn't Goody's best coaching performance. As we talked about last week, it was Port played exactly like Port play, fast from the halfback flank, try to, you know, win the contest, play on emotion. You know what you're going to get. That's what you got. And Goody, it just felt like Goody was really trying to sort of go into the game and use that transition game for us. And when, you know, and I'll dig into the numbers a bit now, we're actually transitioning the ball very, very effectively from the back half and as well as Port did in this game. It's just, as you noted, our inability to hit up targets inside 50. And, you know, it looks bad because you're kicking to Radigalia, who was on world record intercept marking. But part of that is the deal is that the forwards are supposed to bring it to ground and halve a few of those contests. Some of that was poor efforts from our forwards, I thought, defensively. But a lot of it was just terrible kicking to the disadvantage of the forward. You know, the forwards must pull their hair out. You just got to kick it 1 metre or half a metre to one side and then they they've got a reasonable crack at least halving the contest. So, George, there's a comment in the thingo about not interrupting you when, you know, to your perspective, but it did occur to me, so I will take that on board. Ross Millian, who had that in the pod, but it really highlighted one of our big problems is, you know, Spargo doesn't kick enough goals, arguably doesn't get enough possessions, but as I noted last week, he can at least reliably hit a target inside 50. 50% of his kicks inside 50 hit a target, and that's exactly what we were missing last week. Track, as I noted last week, a few weeks ago in mid-May, he had hit one or two targets from 50 kicks inside 50, and I very much doubt he probably had four or five kicks inside 50 in this match, and I very much doubt a single one of them resulted in a mark to the D's. So it's clearly an issue. Whoever's kicking it in, doesn't really matter who, we clearly need better kicks inside 50. Like, we're just not hitting, we're not kicking to advantage and we're not hitting targets, and it's killing us. In terms of the player ratings, this was a really fascinating, mistakenly listened to about 30 seconds. I was actually just flicking of Dermot Brereton saying, basically, why did Cozzy get the HIA test? I don't know if you guys saw that, but
and then Brereton was exposed badly,
wasn't he?
Yeah, because he copped a shoulder straight to his face.
Yeah, and he was, but they were all basically, there are three other people saying, Dermot, what are you talking about? He didn't, and he kept on saying, oh, no, he just put a hand up. He just touched his chin. No, his shoulder hit him. And I didn't realise it was as bad as that. And I wonder whether this was a factor, but in any case, it was a huge factor in how we basically lost his influence. He was the most influential player on the ground at halftime. He was our highest rated player for the match. Now, keeping in mind,
two possessions after halftime.
Well, keeping in player ratings at 20 is regarded as an elite game of footy, all Australian, and his match rating was 22.7, which is remarkable. What's more remarkable is that it was entirely in the first half. He had 11.8 in the first quarter and 10.7 rating points in the second quarter, which is unbelievable. So what's that, 22.5? So not entirely, but 0.2. In the second half, he was basically had no influence in the second half. And I thought that was a massive factor in both where we're at halftime and our inability to threaten in that last quarter in particular. What's interesting is our third quarter was our best quarter, and he was that was his worst quarter in terms of the player ratings, but it was definitely a big factor, huge factor. But he was our highest rating player, 22.7. I say stuff like this every week. I should look it up beforehand. I suspect that's certainly is his highest rated game this season for Coz. I'm pretty sure it is. That would be up in his top four or five highest rated. That's a phenomenal game of footy, and he's, you know, speaking of positive, Andy, let's not bury the lead. How awesome was it that Coz re-signed? I mean, it's just so awesome. Like, I was as excited. I couldn't believe how happy I was about it. I felt like a big kid. I'm going to get 36 on my back. Love it. Just love it.
And how predictable was it that all the media nuffies jump on? Oh, it's too long. Whatever. It's too price is too high. D's jumping at shadows. And I can just imagine if you'd let him go, why didn't the D's do more to try to keep him? Why didn't they offer him another few years? You're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, there was a thing that was on Demonland, maybe you posted it, but of Waitley doing some sort of discussion with Simpson. And it was unbelievable. Waitley was like talking about he has to finish top three in the next five best and fairest. He has to get them a flag. He has to. What the bloody hell are you talking about? And it was so nice to hear Simpson say, no, we're here to win flags. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what the players get. If that increases our chances of winning a flag, is paraphrasing, or winning games, is what he said, Simpson. And that's exactly right. I mean, but Waitley, what the hell is he talking about? Like, he must, you know, it's the market that speaks. Like, and as I said last week, I wasn't even joking. He's our best forward, our best mid, and our best kick. You know, he's our best player in the team at the moment. You know, so therefore, he deserves to be paid the most. It was brilliant. You know, the 9 years, I couldn't have been more thrilled. So anyway, he turned it on in the first half. Fantastic. Interestingly, only 77% time on the ground, I guess, and that HIA was done during the break. So not much of that would have been because of the HIA. He was on, I think he started the third quarter, I'm pretty sure, or at least soon afterwards. So it wasn't because of that. So that was interesting. I thought Disco Turner was our second highest rated player, 16.6. He continues to thrive. Terrific game from him. Our best quarter was our third quarter, and that was his best quarter. Harvey Langford, as I mentioned before, he had a phenomenal game, really surprising. A little surprising that he was rated so highly, 15.5 for the match, including 9.9 in the first quarter. And just to compare that, Cozzy was 11.8. That's a serious quarter of footy under this system by Harvey Langford. The kid is going to be a jet. Steve May, it was interesting. He was our fourth highest, 12.3, but you know, it's interesting. We'll talk about this a bit later, but Georgiadis certainly got on top of him. Not that really you could blame Steve May for a lot of that.
The delivery, but, I mean, I just wish our delivery. What could he have done? And then when he did an excellent bit of body maneuvering.
That was an appalling decision, wasn't it?
When
he threw him out of the way to mark it. Like all day, every day they pay that mark. As I mentioned before, Stephen May was on the ground for every second of that game, so 100%. Bailey Fritsch was our fifth highest rated player, his best game for the season. Our best quarter, as I said, was the third quarter. His best quarter was the third quarter, 7.5 player rating points. Terrific game by Fritter. He looks up and about. And in fact, he looks one of the freshest players in terms of running on top of the ground. He was really relishing that sort of half forward role. He was in defense quite a bit. Fantastic game by him. And, you know, it's great to have Fritter back near his best form. It's just some notable ones. Max Gorn had his lowest rated game for a long time, 9.5. And, you know, you talked about us dominating the clearances. Well, we'll get to that in a sec. Yeah, we didn't win many tap outs for the first quarter. They kept on mentioning it in the coverage, and we struggled to we didn't end up really dominating, and certainly from scores from stoppages. I wonder where the big Maxis, it'd hardly be a shock that he's probably looking for the break. He's had a massive season thus far, hasn't he? This is something I have to focus on. It's Van Rooyen, not Van Ruin. So I've been asked to make it clear that it's Rooyen, out of respect for Jacob. So Jacob Van Rooyen, hopefully I'm saying that correct. He had his best game for a while, 6.4 in the first quarter. He fell away. He's still a ways off his confident best. But, you know, we've got to keep him in the side. He's a long-term player. And then finally at the bottom, Christian Salem didn't have a great game. Jack Viney had another low-rated game, and Harrison Petty had another low-rated game. So what did the stats tell us about why we could have won? And I've put in my notes here, could in italics, because I don't really think it was a game where, you know, you could argue, oh, we should have won that game. Port were the deserved winners, I think. We had the opportunity to win. Again, we didn't take we didn't take advantage of the momentum that we had in the third quarter through some inexplicably, you know, the Sparrow not getting that goal. Like, there's, like, you could go through them.
He would kick that at training. That'd
be a 9 out of 100 times, wouldn't he?
Yeah, more than that.
Oh, unbelievable. And Maxi, you know, that miss, there was, speaking of Van Rooyen, he muddled up a couple with, you know, there was one where, come on, one of you, Fritsch and Van Rooyen, and, you know, come on, one of you, mark the ball. There were three or four of them where we had guilt opportunities to take the lead and get a bit of scoreboard pressure on them, and we just didn't. And, when we didn't, I was worried. What the stats tell us about why we could have won as opposed to last week, why we should have won. So it's worth noting in that context is that our expected score was 85. What was that? Expect expected score, I always bundle this up, was 85 and we scored 68. Their expected score was 99. Hold on, this is cut and paste error from the, I don't, bear with me for a sec. Here we go. So the expected score was 85 and we only scored 68. Their expected score was 99.9 and they scored 93. Either way, they win that game on both expected score, and even if we kicked accurately, they win the game. So 85 to 99, or almost 100 for them. So it wasn't a case of us, you know, kicking ourselves out of it. They were deserved winners. Having said all of that, we did have our opportunity to win the game. You just got to put scoreboard pressure on, and we didn't. You know, all of the things, it's what I meant before about we've seen this movie. I could have picked these numbers from any of the last 4 or 5 weeks. We smashed them for contested possessions, plus 27. So in the contest, we won the contest. We came out, you know, just like we did against the Pies. We were even stronger in the contest, and they were certainly hard at it. Plus 27 for contested possessions, plus 5 for ground ball gets. The big one that Goody would have been thrilled at, post-clearance contested possessions, we were plus 18, plus 3 for post-clearance ground ball gets. We took 5 more contested marks than them, which is remarkable given Georgiadis clunk quite a few. And again, we did brilliantly in terms of our tackles inside 50, 10 to 4, plus 6. So those numbers are all terrific in the contest, and exactly what Goody would have wanted to see. And so, you know, it's interesting about the discussion about the game plan. The game plan is working. It's the finishing of it. Clearance numbers, this is a sort of point that I was alluding to before, Andy, when you said we dominated. We're actually only plus 5 for total clearances, so 37 to 32. We only had 2 more centre clearances. So it was, I think, Maxi had a very, you know, middling game, certainly as indicated by, you know, he's been up around 17, 18, 19, 20 points for the last, you know, 5 weeks, and he's 10 or 9.5.
He took some really nice, it's stats you're looking at, but he took some really saving marks at times, but I guess we didn't win. So.
Yeah, he did, but he did, like, what's George, who's the ruckman, the young fella?
Vizzantini and Sweet were the two ruckmen.
Yeah, well, they were dominating, as I said, like, it's only plus 7, only plus 5 for total clearances, plus 3 only from around the ground, which is where Maxi, you'd think, would monster those two young fellas, because Sweet's pretty young too, isn't he, George?
No, he's been around for a while. Only his first game back this week.
Yeah, so that was quite interesting, and maybe there was some tactical stuff when we're looking. I don't know, but we definitely didn't, you know, win it off Maxi's tap outs. What was interesting with that, even though our clearances number, we had first possessions 15 times more than them. So, and to me, it really speaks to the difference in the sides about the, you know, we'll get to the question later about midfield, but you know, we didn't do any hurt with those first possessions. You know, maybe they sweated on us, but they did with their first possessions. You know, they punished us when they got the chance with their first possessions. We had 15 more. That is a lot, particularly given Maxi didn't have, you know, dominant game in as ruck. So, you know, that was a really, you know, we got a lot right in terms of the contest. We got a lot right in terms of the clearances. But where that was, you know, we were only for scores from stoppages. They scored 3 goals, 1-19 out of the centre. We scored 1 goal, 2-8. So we were minus 11 from the centre, despite winning total clearances. Despite winning centre clearances, we had 2 more than them. They outscored us. And stoppage around the ground was even, you know, we did better out of that 4-4, 28 to 2 goals, 1-13, plus 15. So we're only plus 4 for stoppages, despite Maxi nominally, you know, he would have loved to have seen those two ruckmen normally. One of the things, though, that is, you know, really interesting about the way we're playing, and I think that is probably easy to, is that we're moving the ball actually, you know, really well from the back half. And the sort of evidence of that is that we're despite the fact that we're not scoring from because of our inability to hit targets, We're actually, in terms of moving the ball, our defensive chains have been terrific. Chains to score, so chaining up possessions to scoring percentage, we beat them in that. Defensive 50 to forward 50, just 26.5% to 25, so we beat them in that. Defensive half to forward 50 transition, 36.1 to 33, so we beat them in that. You know, again, they're all about the transition. It was the challenge was defensive half to score, we were, that's where we broke down, 11.5 to 16. They were just more efficient. And defensive 50 to score percentage, they were almost twice as us. We fire only 5.9% of the time from our defensive 50 with a chain did we score. They were 12.8. And a lot of that was that last kick inside 50, you know, not so much our inaccuracy. Our last kick inside 50 was terrible. And, you know, we fell into the same trap as we have. It seemed like a combination of the new method and the old method of our players bombing it to the opposition intercepting defender, which was super frustrating. But it does speak to how well we're, you know, the method, how well we're moving the ball. It's that last piece that's obviously a massive frustration for everyone, and you know, Goody, no doubt about that, it'd be a massive frustration for Goody. So scores per inside 50 were interesting. So 42.6 percent of time we scored per inside 50 is just our inaccuracy. Goals, though, that's the big difference. 16.7% of the time to their 29.2. You know, that's arguably the game. The other one that was really evident, and you're right, Andy, was some of the kicking to Georgiadis. Not just the ones on the lead, but also the kicking to advantage, to, you know, not giving the defender a chance to come across. And again, it was really weird. Like, Lever is really neutered, isn't he, when he's not getting that opportunity to be the third man intercepting marker. He's not great one-on-one, and it's sort of, if you take that intercepting role, you know, he suddenly looks like Superman without his cape. And but marks inside 50, we took 10, which is not bad for us. Unfortunately, they took 16. So what do the stats tell us about why we lost? One of the great things about Demon Land is it's by far and away my favourite source of information and discussion about the game. Some really excellent, as I mentioned last week, there's always some excellent commentary and comments on there. This one was in the stats file thread, a comment from Delightful D, who noted, until we can improve our consistency of method and execution in the turnover game, our results will also be inconsistent. This year, in every match, we've won the scoring from turnover battle. We've won the game, other than against the Hawks, where we only won it by 2 points, but got outscored from stoppage by 30, which was our third worst result for the year, behind minus 42 in round two and minus 33 in round three. We lost the turnover battle by an average of 22 points in the first five rounds, won it by an average of 14 in the next six rounds, in which we won five of those six games, and lost it by an average of 21 in the last three games, which, of course, we've lost. Delightful D goes on to say, I know where I'd be focusing our opportunity for improvement over the bye period. Win the turnover battle, it gives ourselves the best chance of winning the game, and in particular how we defend turnover from opposition D50 to inside 50. And I think that's right. You know, it's huge for us. That's definitely a factor. So from the scores from turnover, we conceded 60 after giving up 67 points on turnover last week. This week we gave up 60 and could only manage 31 ourselves. Didn't help that we kicked 4-7 in that stat. So we lost the turnover count by 29, which is arguably the game right there. And you know, we didn't. Part of that is about defending it, and part of it is not scoring more ourselves. But 67 last week, 60 this week is, you know, I think the AFL average is 42 or something, and our season average, or 41, our season average is 43. So terrible scores from turnover. It's definitely defending 50. But what I'd say, as I mentioned last week about stats, is stats like that. Turnover is a symptom, and it's not the reason. It's an outcome. It's a symptom of other stuff. And again, I go back to the most important stat in footy's pressure, and that's what is that turnover is not entirely, because there's also the factor of defending the opposition turnovers and not allowing them to score. But you could see when they were putting their pressure on us, that caused our kicking efficiency to drop. We've already got poor kicks. We've got a lot of players who are technically poor kicks, which is of course made, you know, that technical flaws, those technical flaws are exacerbated when teams bring the heat, the finals like pressure. And as soon as they did, we struggled to dispose of the ball. You create turnovers in dangerous spots and they were good enough to take advantage of it. But it's all about the pressure. In the first quarter, it was a really disappointing. I was really disappointed visually. So last week I talked about how the pressure ratings didn't marry up with the way the game was played. That wasn't true this week. It was exactly, the numbers were almost exactly what I would have guessed if I'd been asked. The first quarter we could only 158, maybe we're a bit flat, I don't know, but to their 170, 12 difference. The second quarter, 175 to 186, and that's what it looked like. It was a really disappointing. Our best quarter by far, both visually and on the scoreboard. And we, you know, this is where we lost the game that we didn't put scoreboard pressure on during this period, was really our only except a 180 being considered sort of baseline pressure rating. And remember, the pressure rating was brought in by the coaches. They specifically wanted this measure to have an ability in game to look at where teams are at in terms of the pressure they're bringing. In the third quarter, we clearly came out steam in our nostrils, and it looked like at 190 to 175, that was by far our best quarter, as I said, in terms of scoring and differential, 190 to 175 plus 15. They wanted to win and they ran out the game much better. We fatigued absolutely. The last quarter, 174 to 192, minus 18 pressure points in that last quarter. And that's what it looked like for the game, minus 8 for the game, really, if not for that third quarter where we blitz them on the pressure rating, you know, that would have been another blow. It's another game we've lost when we're our pressure rating hasn't been enough. Pressure, everything stems from pressure. So that the reason why I link that to turnover, that's exactly right what Delightful D is saying, but it sort of makes my point about that a lot of numbers are really about the, you know, their symptoms. And so our conceding 60 points on turnover is partly it's right about our inability to defend on turnover, but it's also about the fact that not being able to manage the pressure put on us for whatever reason, not just because we're poor kicks, but I thought there were some structural challenges as well. And we don't score on turnover if we're not bringing the pressure. So in that third quarter, a lot of that was scores from turnover. In terms of stats, it's like you highlighted it, Andy. It's impossible not to talk about Georgiades' game. He had a fantastic game of footy, old school, marked it well. Everything that we're not being able to do, kick 7, 4, 46, 16 kicks, 67% kicking efficiency. He had 7 contested possessions, 4 inside 50s, 13 score involvements, which I think that was the number, Andy. It was 13 score involvements. Oh, no, sorry, it was the most 11 scoring shots, was the most scoring shots, as you noted, this century for Port. Impressive game. I thought Goody made a mistake not having May on him right from the get-go. I think Howes was on him at one stage. I thought defensively we looked as sort of all out of shape as we have for a long time. I had to laugh because there was a comment about on Demonland about the player ratings. He was the 22nd. His player rating was 10 points. He got 10 coaches' votes, so clearly the coaches saw his game as, you know, obviously the most influential player on the ground. Terrific performance by him. And we just couldn't contain him. I thought Lever didn't have a great game. I thought Howes was just okay. McVee worked hard, but he was really ill-disciplined. Giving away that goal was just, I know it didn't look much in it, did it? But you just don't do that. And he made a couple of mistakes, although he is looking like he's getting back to his best as well. And we really need McVee up and about playing really good footy.
All right, let's get into it. It's no surprise. The first question's going to be about our goal-kicking woes, and Golordy writes, "Cheer up, Demonlanders. The mighty Ds are now clear competition leaders in the important area of kicking behinds. Yes, We have now kicked 179 behinds and are now 11 clear of the Lions, the Dogs, the Pies and the Cats. Great company, eh? What to do about it? Well, now finals are out of the picture. Goody should redesign our training regime so that we spend 50% of training time practicing goal kicking. It has become more than embarrassing. We are a laughing stock. I imagine that when Max has taken a terrific mark in the forward 50 and he's lining up for goal, the opposition players are saying to each other, set up for a kick out. Question for Bin Man, does the TAB offer in-game odds on set shots for goal? It would be a surefire way for D supporters to at least make a few bucks out of their misery by backing the behind. Go D's. Pimpmaster says, did anyone notice that after Max marked on his chest directly in front of goal that he prepared for the kick by walking with his back turned on the goal at an angle that increased the degree of difficulty of kicking the goal? He actually set off from a point pretty much in line with the outer boundary of the goal square, so he could have taken his kick from directly in front instead of on at an angle. Of course, he missed. Back in round one, 2018, Max's inability to kick accurately from directly in front cost us a win against Geelong. Despite his 2021 heroics in the preliminary final and round 22 against Geelong, this has been a costly recurring problem. Basic secondary question, if the captain cannot be persuaded to correct this one serious flaw, how can any player be made to do so? Little wonder we are the only team to have registered more points than goals in 2025. Wells 11 says, it's an obvious observation, but we're playing good enough footy to win these kind of matches. We're doing such a lot right, but our kicking for goal isn't just bad, it's PTSD levels now and he's killing us. Max is a case in point. He was never great, but a 60-40 proposition or maybe even just 50-50, but he's kicked 2 goals, 13 this year and looks utterly at sea in his goal-kicking routine. I honestly think that many in this team are now mentally scarred. Track looks the same, as does Petty. It's more than practice now. I think it's psychological, and I just don't see how this is going to end. Any thoughts? And Travi14 says, people need to get over Max's goal-kicking. He isn't a good kick. No player can do everything, and Max can do pretty much everything except that. Take the good with the bad and relish it while we still can. And George, do we need to hire a psychologist or an exorcist to cure our goal-kicking woes?
We all need the exorcist. I don't know about the players. We've got lots of failings in our forward line, one of which is the inability to kick straight. There are a number of other factors, but we'll talk about that in terms of structure and selection and things like that, which do not help us one iota in the first place. The fact is we are getting the ball in the 50 and we're giving ourselves plenty of opportunities and we're not capitalising on those. Pitmaster, I think, gave us a very, very good example of what's absolutely wrong with Max. The first thing he does is he turns his back on the goal.
Which isn't good anyway.
Which is not good anyway. That's where you're going to be kicking it. Yeah. And all you've got to do, for example, is look at people like Jesse Hogan, Jack Gunson, Georgiades. They don't turn their back on the goal. They look at where they're going to put it in the first place. They visualise where it's going to go before they even start. So that's the first thing. Then he's got this ridiculous habit of spinning the ball around in his hands from one hand to the other. And again, watch Georgiades. His hands are on both sides of the ball, on the opposite sides of the balls, and they don't move. He gets the feeling for where he's going to put it, how he's going to do it. And it's just about practice. Jesse Hogan's the same. It's just about practice. They have a technique that they follow all the time. And the trouble for Max is his technique is not working. So change it. Do something about it. There was a very interesting post on Demonland from Damo, who had done some work coaching people to kick, and he suggested things like, you know, as far as accuracy, kicking inside but not with a roof any more than 3 metres, so that you had to kick it long and straight and then try and get into a bin at the other end. But it's all about practice, and if you've got an open-air theatre like we have all the time where we train, Max is going to kick the ball 50 metres up in the air and 50 metres longwise. He's got to stop doing that if he wants to increase his accuracy. So, yeah, we'll talk about other things later on, and there are some serious other things seriously deficient with the structure and the rotations and all sorts of things like that. But it's about technique. All the good golfers, all the good basketball players, all the good sportsmen in any of these sports practice, 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 and they fix their technique to improve. But we're not seeing any evidence. Track's still kicking as badly as ever did. Max is still kicking as badly as ever did. Petty needs to be improving by a long, long shot. So I don't know what to do about it. We certainly need someone taking them aside and telling them you have to change. What you're doing is not working.
And I reckon it's a totally reasonable question, Andy, about the psychology, is because there's no doubt, I totally agree with you, George. The other thing I'd add about Maxi is he hasn't got any routine anymore. Like, there was a bit where he's most accurate, where he seemed to have found at least a routine. It still didn't look great. He was still spinning his hand. But, like, same with track. They look like he's got no routine. But there is an aspect of which appears to me to be some sort of psychology at work, or there's something in there that's gremlins got into the system somehow, because Petty technically is an excellent kick. He's an excellent field kick. His technique looks solid. He's got a good ball drop, but he looks like, he looks like he's not confident as he goes for goal each time. And, so I think it's an absolutely valid question is, how much technically can you do practice given the demands of the high performance program and all of that? Well, maybe they've got to give up a little bit for that, but to practice more. And as George suggests, with some different strategies, that because something needs to be improved. But I do wonder whether the psychology, where we're at in terms of our psych support for the teams, because there was all of that talk about leading teams. I haven't heard anything of leading teams still at the club. And, there was some horrible numbers, speaking of stats, on Demonland in the last couple of weeks about our record in games under like a goal margin. It's unbelievable. I forget what it was, but horrific.
I don't remember what it was. All I saw was Collingwood's, which was 21 wins and 5 losses and 2 draws.
Yeah, and ours was almost under McRae. The first of that. Yeah. And that's psychology as well, isn't it? Like, there's a bit about skill execution, but there's also about the psychology. And so I do wonder, where that's at the club in terms of the sort of mental aspect of the game and whether we need to be looking at that. And as we talked about at the beginning of the season, as George noted, is we got no real information about what the review actually reviewed and what the findings were, just some motherhood statements, and one of which was this conversation or about leading teams. Well, where are they? Why aren't they coming out saying this is what we're working on? We're trying to build their resilience for, finishing games and winning those close ones, or not bottling it when, they're kicking for goal. It's a fair criticism. We bottle a lot, don't we? It's beyond what do they say? It's not a flaw, it's a feature, or something like that. So, yeah, it's definitely a valid question, Andy, in terms of is there something psychological there at play? But your points are all made, well made, George, in terms of something needs to change, in terms of whatever they're doing at the club to practice goal kicking, the evidence is clear it's not working.
Did you see the I was in the Demonland thread during the week about goal kicking accuracy. The very bottom for all major goal kickers, they had most of the players in the league. The very bottom was Max Gorn and Christian Petrarca at about 20%. And Fritter's 60%, but that gives you an idea of the gulf between the two. Those are our players. In comparison with other teams' goal kickers, they're right down the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, one thing on Maxi, though, I have to say, after we were talking about it last week, I think, Andy, you might have suggested, but it was great to see Maxi in the forward line. Pity you can't kick the goal, but like it did seem to have an influence, and it did make me wonder, why we don't more often. And it'll be interesting to see whether they bring Jefferson back in for that third tour, as we talked last week. But Port Power did need 3 tours.
Clintosaurus writes, did you think the return of Jack Viney unbalanced the midfield? Demon Cat says, this is probably a question better reserved for the end of season podcast, but effectively is the end of season. But what are we going to do about our midfield balance going forward? Viney, Track and Clary are not the players who are going to win a game in the middle of the ground for you in 2025. Every contending club has speedy and skillful midfielders who can extract and hit targets. We have crash and bash midfielders who always look like they're from another era. I acknowledge that the club has gone some way to addressing this by bringing in good ball users and revamping the game plan. But as long as those three continue to be our leading possession getters, it's going to continue to lose us games. Witch's Hat says, we all seem to acknowledge that the midfield needs a shake-up. Is leaving Track in the forward line an option, a la Dangerfield at Geelong? He's very good overhead and, in my opinion, would provide a better option than Petty, who has no physical presence whatsoever. Your thoughts, please, gentlemen. So, Big Man, what are your thoughts on the midfield balance and particularly also Track playing?
I agree with all of those comments, and I thought Viney, like, you know, as I said before, is that as a – you just like those three players together, Track, Oliver, and Viney. Like I said last week, you know, they're all hammers when we need a scalpel. And if you compare, you know, the way they, you know, like I said, we won enough first possessions to hurt the opposition. We just didn't. And, you know, they did. They hit targets coming out of, you know, out of when they won clearance, when they got first possessions. I do think it is a bit unbalanced. You know, I think that, like, Oliver has been terrific this year, but he lacks pace. There's no question about that. There was, you know, it was one point where they were running away from him. You know, I think they got tired. They were flagging at mid, you know, looking for the bye and coming off 7 days. But Oliver both reverted to bombing it under pressure. And maybe that's what muscle memory over 5, 6, 7 years of playing a particular method brings you to when your instinct and you're tired is you put it on the boot. But it cost us a couple of times. And Viney, ironically, a couple of times streaming out of the centre, he wasn't trying to bomb it. He was trying to hit a target and might as well have bombed it because he ended up kicking it to them. And so I do think that it's a bit unbalanced. I think Oliver, as much as I reckon he's been terrific this year, but the problem with Oliver is he can only play in the midfield. I agree. I'm quite surprised that they haven't played Track forward more often. You know, we all talked at the beginning of the season, the sort of consensus seemed to be Track would be a 50-50 midfielder, 50, you know, forward. You know, he's playing mainly as a mid at the moment. I would like to see him play more forward, you know, where he's done his real damage over his career. David King was always prattling on about Track being the sort of archetype power player who does damage as a forward, like the Dusty Martin style. And so I just don't think you can have those three players on the ball at the one time. And what was really, really sort of highlighted that was when Cozzy wasn't on the ball and when he wasn't influential in the first, in the second half. But in the first half, it was like the only player who was really going to provide some hurt out of the centre was if he could get that first possession or second give to Coz, it felt like. Whereas they always looked like danger and they were feeding it out. So, yes, I think they need to look at it. The problem is they're a bit wedged, aren't they? Because they can't, you know, you've got Lindsay who may be a mid at some point, although he looks like a natural rangy winger. To me, he reminds me of Browning from that Swans player so much. And, you know, ultimately Langford will go into the middle, but Langford really can't go into that mix either because he's a bit of a bullet, you know, like he's a bit of a hammer. You know, it's the question will be, can you get a player like McVee in there? They tried him last year. Rivers is a younger player. He's come in. He's another hammer. So, yeah, short answer is, yeah, I agree. It does look a bit unbalanced. What they can do about it is, you know, they're trying, I think, with Coz. You know, it'll be interesting to see whether Seston gets a go. He's better, but he's not quick. But we've gone from a method that really advantages us having those contested ball winner and get it forward territory to it being a disadvantage to a degree.
Lazy says, felt like the softest butter game from the COVID season where we just refused to acknowledge the other side of the ground. I don't care anymore about results. I just want to see us persist with the game plan that we were trying to achieve. Games like this with the same old method are a waste of time. Ross Millen says, unfortunately, I feel like we did not take the game on at all. There was no fastball movement, no risk taken. Our discipline or lack thereof, or frustration is creeping in. I'm happy to lose playing our new method, but for me, we lacked ambition. Travi14 says, I think some Demonlanders need to realise we have changed our game style, but have a lot of players that have spent the last 6+ years playing and training our old style. So the dump kick naturally sneaks back into their game. It's frustrating, yes, but they are working on changing from it. All you have to do is look at the players doing it. Oliver, Viney, May, Track and Co. These guys won a premiership and finished top four playing the forward territory game. They will just need a bit more time and training to lose that muscle memory. George, have we gone away from the new game plan, or are we caught between the two styles? What's that, or reverting back to the old style? What's happening?
I don't really know. We're certainly playing the same game style that we were playing in 2021, which won us a premiership and was valid for 2021. Get it forward, get it in there. Pressure, tough at the ball and all that. And the evidence is the ball is getting inside the 50-metre arc, giving opportunities. Like I said, there's a couple of factors. We'll talk about it shortly, but we do not have enough people as targets inside 50 to suit that style of play. We do not have enough leading targets in five inside 50 to be able to suit that style of play. The structure is completely wrong. When Binman was talking about the mids, I want to see Langford in there. I mean, the season's written off now. I want to see Langford in the mids as soon as possible. The one advantage that Langford has over all the existing players in the midfield is he can kick the ball, and he can hit targets.
And he holds on to it if there isn't a target to hit.
Yep. So I'd much prefer to see him going into the midfield as we saw, compared to we saw at one stage Salem going into the midfield trying to hold Jason Lord Francis, and that led to a goal. You've got to have people who have got big bodies who can kick. That's the way the game's being played. And unfortunately, our three primary mids that we play at the moment aren't going to be the ones that'll win us any future premierships the way they're playing.
Yeah, and which doesn't mean they can't play a role in another. Like, I just think you need one ball and two or three good ball users. But just a comment on the game plan is that was my point before I was trying to make, is we are playing the new method. Like, it was almost 50-50% time in forward half was almost 50-50. That's what it's been now almost the entire season. When people talk about this forward half game that we played in 21, 22, 23, we were playing games where we're 60% time in forward half to 40 regularly. Like, that has just not been the case at all. As I just said before, our transition numbers were better than them. What wasn't better than theirs? So in this game, they're a transition from halfback flank side, so are Collingwood. We were better at transitioning the ball than both teams. This game was an example of the new method. The new method was exactly like I was talking about last year, the red and blueprint. Under Goody, under all teams, under also Port as well, it's got nothing to do with Melbourne per se, is every team now has to win the pressure count. You do not win games of footy if you don't win the pressure count. Every team wants to win the contest. That's just like but you've got to do these other things as well. And for us, of course, our turnaround when we won the 5-game is when we got back to winning the contest and winning pressure. But that's no magic bullet. It's not like suddenly we went back to our own method, our old method. We haven't. We are trying to play the transition game with our tweak on it is really fast ball movement. We are, as I said many times already, we are the fastest team in the AFL at playing on after a mark and handball. Collingwood are the slowest in the AFL. We are playing, you could see in that first half, in particular that first quarter, how much of the game was played between the arcs. It was bouncing back and forth. That's transition footy. We're not playing forward half, trap it in. Arguably, there was it Go Lordy in the beginning of the season, or David from Adelaide, saying we should be. That's what we should be, because it won us a flag in 21. And I argue, well, no, we need to win a flag in 25 or 26 or 27. And so we definitely are playing a different game plan. It's just that we're not got the skill players that to do the hurt. So we're getting that enough inside 50s. We're getting enough good looks. As George said, we don't have the forwards who are marking the ball at the moment. But to be fair to them, we're kicking inside 50 is just appalling. Our ability to either hit a target inside 50 or advantage kick inside 50. Having said that, definitely in the last couple of weeks, well, last week not so much because I think it was deliberate. In this game, 100%, who was that last comment from Travi 14, 100%, I think, under pressure, some of our stars, in particular Track and Clary, just blind dumped it in and it got swallowed up. So frustrating. What we weren't doing is what Steve May did at one point. Instead of just driving it deep inside, he went around the top of the arc and we ended up getting a goal from it. A couple of our transition goals were terrific. And what was so frustrating is that three or four times, like I said, we moved it better than them and we scored as often as they did. We just didn't score goals. And we just left five, six goals on the table just from rubbish kicks with that last kick inside 50. We kick those goals. No one's talking about us playing an old school type of footy. They're saying Melbourne's new method is working.
All right, well, let's talk about that connection into forward 50 because Track Forever writes, so the game plan is working and for the most part we're executing it, just can't convert our inside 50s. That's what you said. Do you think we blood kids or persist with the current team and back them in on lowering their eyes when kicking into the forward 50? Should I dare say we've missed Spargo's entries into the forward line? I know, B-Man, you're going to agree with that. But seeing us just bomb the ball in over and over had me pulling my hair out. Buck Naked says, we continue to make the same dreadful errors that cannot kick for goal. Radish D says, how many more weeks of terrible forward half play does the footy department think is acceptable? It's already been about 70 going back to 2022. Another season or two should do it. For mine, the petty experiment has to be killed. He may bring the ball to ground, but when he gets a shot, he's not punishing enough. Petty and Turner look like the future of our back line, so they should play as such. If Jeffo and JVR are the future up forward, let's play them there. If they go 3 weeks without kicking goal, the club must persist. It matters very little that Petty gets 10 balls to ground a game and then the result is 1-2 goals, but butchers the ball when he has a chance himself. SPC says, miss the questions. Well, he didn't. I got him in. But keen to know how you believe we could build trust within the forwards and mids. It's a chicken and egg scenario where forwards don't lead as the mids do, not lower their eyes, and the mids bomb it as long as the forwards are stagnant. How do we address this issue ingrained over time? And Spirit of Norm Smith says, why do we bomb it inside 50 to a pack so many times? The opposition often marks it, how Wilkie Radigalia in the last 3 weeks, or spoil it when we have no crumbing forwards. It's bombed in high, each time with the same result. It's mindless. It's either the coaches or the players. So after 3.5 years, who's accountable? Our goal kicking, I think it's time for a big rant. The third quarter was a horror show. 6 chances, 4 behinds. Petty, Gorn twice, Sparrow, Eichold like miss. And the 2 from Track and Clary snaps from 15 metres that didn't make the distance. Whilst I'm a passive person normally, the swear jar got a few coins added in that third quarter. Do you have techniques for fellow Demonlanders to keep calm during such times? Doug Reamer says, B-Man, are you able to tell me how many ineffective inside 50s we had this week? That's the worst delivery I've seen in a long time. B-Man, before I get to ask you how we fix this dysfunctional forward line and the delivery inside it, just going on to the point of Spirit of Norm Smith or whoever said about the Clary and Track snaps, it's been a big a bugbear of mine for a long time. Our players do not have any penetration in their snaps whatsoever. How many times do we snap it from 15 metres, 20 metres, 30 metres?
This year it's been unbelievable.
It doesn't even clear the line. I see some players from teams get it from 35 and snap it post-height through the middle of the
sticks. That was a bloody comedy of errors, that one that Oliver. It was almost as if Port were saying, come on, we'll give you 3 chances at scoring a goal, and it ended up with Oliver and he couldn't make the distance. He kicked it to the Port player in the square. How frustrating.
That's my biggest frustration with our
Sparrow couldn't kick from 2 metres.
Sparrow couldn't kick from 2 metres. And I've got no advice on the swear jar because, as I said, I don't normally go off and by myself in front of the television, but I was furious in that third quarter with some of our kicking, and Track was really the one that did my head in. And as for Doug Reamer's question, I haven't got the exact stat, but that's what I was saying. It's essentially the point I was making before is that so scores per inside 50 was 42.6 to 47.9. So we're actually pretty good. It's just that we're not taking advantage of it. And, you know, we had 25 shots at goal to their 27. This is what I mean by the sort of the numbers tell a different story to the, you know, the idea of, for instance, Ross Millian thinking we're just playing we're reverting. There's no reverting. Climbing forward half 53 to 46, inside 50s. When, you know, remember how frustrating it was in 23 and 24 when we were losing games, we were winning inside 50, 60 to 40 and things like that. It's 58 to 48. We only won inside 50 count by 50. The problem is that scores per inside 50 were 42.6% to 47, so not crazy difference. The big difference is goals per inside 50. Only 16.7% of the time did we score a goal to their 29.2% of the time, and that's the difference, and that's that last kick inside 50. I mean, if you exactly as you noted, Andy, it wasn't just those lace-out passes that Georgiadis got. That we, you know, we got one of them, which was that pass from who it was beautiful bit of play from who was it? It was Koz. Koz kicks that set up that first goal that Van Ruin kicks from the boundary. Koz gets our next, next goal and a goal assist. The first three goals were all Koz, and because he hits targets, and they were not falling over themselves hitting targets. And if they weren't putting it down Georgiadis' throat, it's a good thing he was inaccurate. They were kicking it to his advantage. And that's one of the things that just completely does my head in is, and I think it makes it bad for Petty. I've been a big Petty fan, but he's losing me a bit because he's just, there's no hurt, is he? And all of the resting, the one-on-one, you know, as George has noted a little bit, we're getting no separation from it. And we look like we wanted to create one-on-ones, but we weren't winning them, and Goody's stuck with that plan. You know, we weren't winning the ground ball when it hit the ground, even though we were tackling inside 50. I think a big factor was Koz being quiet in the second half, obviously hurt our scoring ability. You know, I will talk about it later, but I'm sort of with you from George last week, is bring Jefferson in, and, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Petty come out, because Petty's got to do more than wrestle. Well, he's got to make sure the opposition doesn't intercept Mark, and he's not doing that at the moment. And I thought Melksham fell a bit back to earth as well. He wasn't influential in terms of, you know, minimising the impact of the intercepting defenders. So, you know, the other factor in that game, by the way, is that they had a player off. I forget who got injured early, but they had a couple of players injured.
Aaliyah was off for a while.
Went off, but they also
afterwards,
and they all half of them had the flu going into the game, didn't they? As well,
Juan Francis was off for about 20 minutes as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit about what I was talking about last week. Is how much can you blame the forwards ahead of the ball when the kicking's just so terrible inside 50? I mean, you mentioned track accuracy, George, but more, even worse than that, because goals are icing, is he's kicking inside 50. I mean, as I said, 50 kicks inside 50, marks twice. Like, it's almost impossible to imagine a player of his ability could have that many kicks inside 50 and only two of them being marked by one of his teammates. It's almost hard to believe. But that's our issue, is that, you know, we're getting it inside 50, but we're getting it inside 50 with terrible kicks inside 50. What's the answer? As I said last week, I think it's just time. You've got to bring in some players. But maybe we need to be hard at the end of the year, and we need to go to the market and get Wangadeen Miller. Has not been mentioned about Melbourne, but he's exactly the sort of player that we need to get in, someone who's going to deliver the ball, you know, inside 50 and hurt the opposition.
The other thing there's a couple of other things that are severely missing in the forward line, that sufficient number of tools. In this game, in the third quarter, when they move Turner into the forward line, all of a sudden Radicalia's intercept marks disappeared, disappeared. They keep dragging JVR up into the ruck, and Petty was left all on his own in the first half, and there was Radicalia and Alia and Zerk Thatcher and Burton all busily denying him the opportunity to even get a run at the ball, let alone anything else. So we need to bite the bullet that we haven't to date and leave JVR in there, bring Jeff O in, but at least have three talls up there. The other thing that does is it gives those talls the opportunity to bring it to the ground. Petty's got no chance of bringing it to the ground when he's already been taken out of the contest in the first place. And the other thing that's sadly missing is we saw the example of George Yard. He's a great at leading.
Yep.
Who's our best leader? Fritsch, without doubt. But
Fritsch.
I can't think of anyone else. You know, Melchram can't get out of first gear at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, JVR when he's playing well.
JVR when he's not
been, yeah.
Yeah, but the trouble is JVR's playing less than 40% in the forward line.
Well, and also he only played, what did I say, he played in this match?
He played 67%.
Yeah.
Now, when you play him in the ruck, that means he's spending 40% of his time on the pine.
And he didn't have a great rucking game in this one,
he's playing against two prime rucks is the bottom line of that. But regardless of that, we need him in the forward line being a forward. That's what he's paid to do.
Yeah. But the other thing too, George, he's just not – like technically, he's just not clunking him at the moment. Like he got his hands on so many balls, even up the ground when he was rucking where he didn't clunk it. The other thing that's interesting you say, Turner, the thing that was that Turner also changed the dynamic a bit is he was on the move all the time.
Yeah.
Petty seems to be, whether it's by – I presume it's by design and that it's about – sort of trying to stop the opposition mark the ball, but there's no movement, there's no separation.
He's not a leading forward.
Turner's moving all the time.
Turner is,
and dragging his opponent around the forward line, and that was really struck me what the difference was. And you know, he was leading out to the ball, and that's why I think that I'm with you that you know, it's interesting that I think Jefferson's still got a bit of work to do on his competitiveness, but it's getting there. But what he does brilliantly, and I really enjoyed that game, the Essendon game. What he does, he's a natural leader, leading forward. He times his leads really well, and he's a crafty forward. He reads the ball well. You know, if he can get a bit stronger, that will be helpful. But I think it's time we get him in. And Petty really has been disappointing this season.
The other thing is, if you've got people who lead in there, it actually makes it easier for the kickers because they've got a target to hit. You know, you can just imagine, you know, even our poor kicking mids, they come out of the midfield and they've got no one. You know, people say, lower your eyes and look for it. Well, there's no one to lead. No one's leading, so where do you kick it? You might as well bomb it in.
Yeah.
And that's anyhow.
Well, and there's a lot of bombing it in for sure.
Well, all right, next one. Radish D writes, each week the club needs to be doing things that are going to get us closer to another premiership. So the question to the panel, what do we do to achieve that? Because staying the course right now seems to be getting us further away. Goodwin gets some tactical things right on occasion and he won the flag, but he gets a lot wrong. Selection, interchange, sticking with tactics too long. The panel has acknowledged all of these problems this year on multiple occasions. Replacing Goodwin doesn't mean that we have a potato as a coach. We get someone in with their own tactical thoughts, some fresh ideas, no preconceived notions about what works and what doesn't. Maybe they wouldn't do much better, but do we really think that the next best coach waiting in the wings would be worse? We keep hearing from the panel that the Langford, Lindsay, Bowie, McVee, Pickett, Melksham and Van Ruin are elite kicks. Really? That's seven players. Are they truly elite or are we overrating our ball users? And D's 1911 says, you can't change method with the current list. Not enough skill or good decision makers. Our best players are also our weakest link. Roastar says, how disappointing was that game? Seemingly no interest in manning up the short hit-up kick. We just let them have it all day. Teams have done that to us before and just waltz their way way from back half to forward 50 with little or no pressure. I thought we changed that after seeing the intense pressure we would put on the ball carrier and the next possession getter in the previous weeks. I'm not sure where we go from here now. If the boys all lose faith and hunger for the win, we could fall off a cliff in 2025, which was pretty much over before it started. I was so bullish about our finals chances, but that took a hit when we lost to the Saints. Then the 1 point loss to Collingwood, I managed to wrestle with that internally and say we probably weren't going to win that anyway, but I saw a way in which we get on a run now. Go into the bye on the back of a good win and build some momentum in the back half of the season, but now that opportunity is gone. We will be a bottom six team again by the looks of it this year, which just breaks my heart. This list is so much better than that, and that's what hurts the most. Same old issues, some same personnel making the same mistakes. It's hard to fathom how this is not going to get looked at inside the club and getting worked on. Where to from here? Well, at least we won't lose this week. But I'll get both of your thoughts on this question, George, followed by B-Man.
Selection I've started to talk about. I think one of the very basic problems that is tying in with the forward problem is using JVR in the ruck. I think it's now is the season's shot. Now is the opportunity to put a proper backup ruck in the side instead of trying to get the advantage of a small up forward. How about we have three talls up forward, or you know, if you're going to play the three, at least leave two there all the time. So that means putting in someone who's going to be either an additional forward or a second ruck. We've got JVR sitting on the pine for 40% of the game at the moment. You might as well have a Tom Campbell or a Will Varell sitting on the pine for 40% of the game. There's an option there. It's killing JVR what he's being expected to do. Let's see how he goes when he plays full forward for, you know, for 100% of the game or as much as he possibly can. So that's the first thing. We've got to change the way that we're approaching the selection. I don't know what we do with who was it? Radish D was talking about. Yeah, we're hearing that Langford, Lindsay, Bowie, and the others are our elite kicks. That's seven players. That is the problem. We've only got seven. You know, the rest of the side.
And we've got too many butchers. It's not so much about every team needs six or seven. So if you went to any AFL team, you're going to pick out six or seven elite kicks. They're all elite kicks, those players, on by any sort of measure. The problem is that we've, you know, as I've talked about ad infinitum, our three best players, our four like premiership stars, Viney, Max, Track and Clary are all terrible kicks. Yeah. And so we talked about it, the difference to Collingwood, their best seven players are also their best seven kicks. You know, it's getting to the stage now in footy is how it's not so much like how many elite kicks, but how many butchers can you carry in the one team. Rivers is going backwards with his kicking. You know, Steve May has been good in the last couple of weeks, but makes me nervous. Windsor, it made me laugh because Jared Healy said Windsor was one of our very best kicks in the team. And the very next kick he did, he turned it over, and he's not been very good kick. So, you know, you're totally right, George. It's those six or seven, it's how many terrible kicks we've got. That's the problem. Just on the game plan thing, though, like I disagree, obviously, from before, but you can't change method with this current list, not enough good skill or good decision makers. I think in the light of all, of course, it's terrible we lost or whatever, but if we're genuinely thinking about where we're heading as a footy club and looking towards the future, you know, we are heading in the right direction in terms of that method. And you know, Goody gets maligned a lot and, you know, learnings this and discounted. But, you know, there's this idea that you would have seen on footy, on the couch, and Wheelo's rating has done a lot of, has this stat, which, you know, that idea of there being the premiership window, that this idea that it's the teams who win the flag are always basically in that premiership quadrant of the table, which is what you do without the footy and territory and what you do with the footy. And Melbourne are smack bang in the middle of that of that table. So, for instance, as I said, so it's about transition. Defensive 50 to inside 50, we're fourth in the AFL. We're head, by way of contrast, Brisbane are fifth in the AFL for that. Chain to score, we're sixth. You know, points from turnover is where we struggle. We're 14th compared to, say, for instance, Adelaide, who were one, number one in the AFL. And so we're ahead of Sydney, GWS, Port, St Kilda, Richmond. So we're mid-table four on that premiership window. Obviously, you know, basically the teams who are in the top eight are all above us. It's almost almost. So it's Geelong, Collingwood, Adelaide, Western Bulldogs, Carlton, Gold Coast, Hawthorn, Brisbane, Fremantle, then us. That's the teams, those ones that I mentioned ahead of us are the teams in that premiership window, in that quadrant that we'd seen. So there's a lot going right for us in terms of that method, but it's always going to break down when you have too many butchers. And we still need, you know, as much as maybe not all elite those players, but Salem is the other one that you could chuck in that mix. But we need players who can hurt with their kicks inside 50, like Myers, like, you know, like a couple of the kicks from Rosie, a couple of the kicks from Butters on the angle was like, you know, even Horn Francis. Exactly like you said, George, low, flat ones that no one else but them are going to mark. There was one that was kicked to Georgiadis that he dropped, thank God. But it was a bullet coming out of the half-forward flank, and we just don't have enough players who regularly hit those bullets.
The other thing I think we'd, you know, we spoke about it earlier on this year and last year as well, is the loss of Uze. Technically, I think we are really desperately scraping the bottom of the barrel that it took so long. You know, this game was a good example. It took so long for us to put May onto Georgiadis. It took us so long to put Turner into the forward line or even limit the effect, if that was the only effect, was to limit what Radagalia was getting away with. Uze, I'm sure, would have picked that up a long lot earlier and you know, suggested or made the changes. But Goody's on the boundary, man, but the tactical stuff is coming from above, and I don't know that we're doing such a very good job of it at the moment.
Yep, agreed. All right, let's get on to Casey. The Casey Demons extended their unbeaten streak with an impressive 29-point victory over Essendon on a chilly Saturday night at ETU Stadium in Port Melbourne. The 17-10, 121-12, 11-83 result not only maintained their strong form heading into the mid-season bye, but also showcased the squad's depth and emerging talent. Despite conceding the first goal of the match, Casey responded swiftly with a 5-goal burst in the opening term, led by dynamic forward pressure and fast ball movement. Paddy Cross, enjoying a breakout season, was instrumental early with 2 quick goals, while Ricky Mentha provided a spark in the front half. That early dominance laid the foundation for a strong first half, with the Demons heading into the main break 12 points up after Essendon rallied late in the second quarter with 2 momentum-shifting goals. The Bombers continued their surge after halftime, booting the first 3 goals of the third term to briefly claim the lead, but Casey steady thanks to Harry Sharp's scrambling efforts that stopped the Bombers' run and brought the margin back to within a point. What followed was a tense seesawing contest through the latter stages of the third and into the early part of the fourth quarters. Then, as he did in the first term, it was Paddy Cross who blew the game open again. His pair of final quarter goals broke the arm wrestle wide open, triggering a final quarter avalanche of 7 goals that left the Bombers in their wake. Riley Bonner was clearly best of field with 33 disposals, driving Casey's rebound and ball use from the back half and through the corridor. Bailey Lurie continued his excellent form, adding 26 touches, 8 tackles, 7 clearances and a goal in another all-round performance. In the ruck, Will Varell shouldered the full responsibility in the absence of Tom Campbell and rose to the occasion, collecting 44 hitouts, 21 disposals, 9 clearances and 3 tackles in what was arguably a career-best VFL outing. The game also marked a significant moment for teenage debutante Kalani White, son of former Melbourne ruckman Jeff White and former guest on this show, wearing the number 50. Kalani had a quiet start but exploded in the final quarter, finishing with 2 goals, 10 disposals and 11 hitouts in a promising first outing. Despite his Gold Coast Academy ties, White looked very much at home in the red and blue and gave Melbourne fans a glimpse of a potentially exciting future. It was also a strong night for other father-son prospects. Kynan Brown, 18 disposals and 8 tackles, and Tajwa Woden, 17 disposals, 8 tackles and 1 goal, continued to show their tenacity and competitiveness around the contest. Matthew Jefferson, another young tall in the mix, was again solid with 2 goals, 16 touches, 8 marks and 4 tackles, demonstrating improved mobility and forward presence following consecutive 5-goal hauls in previous games. Mitch Hardy and Riley Baldy provided support through the midfield, while Jack Billings was busy early and finished with 22 disposals and 4 clearances. With a well-earned bye to come, the Demons will next face the Gold Coast in warmer conditions, hoping to build on their momentum and continue their surge up the VFL ladder. Did any of you guys watch the game?
Yeah, I I watched the whole lot. It was a strange but fascinating game, particularly with the swings on the scoreboard. We had the game absolutely sewn up in the first quarter, effectively, and then managed to let them back in with some just awful mistakes. That's all you can describe it as. What was it? First quarter, we were 5-2, 32-1, 3-9. It was all over, and then we just let them back into the game. What was interesting in this game that will be interesting for everybody, it was the first in-ball technology is being used or trialed for the first time in this game.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. They didn't mention that on the commentary at all, which, by the way, I have to say, I quite liked the commentary. It was level, interesting, no Campbell Brown, as unless I got that wrong. But, yeah, I thought it was Benny Brown was one of the commentators. I thought he was terrific.
Yeah, they showed it at one point. The example was kicking for goal. They could show exactly where every kick was taken from.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see how that's utilised into the future.
Is that technology the one that can tell you whether it went through the goals or not?
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Theoretically, it should because they were drawing a line from where it was kicked and then the arc and then where it finished up. So theoretically, they should be able to do that, but we can only wait and see. Essendon had their main player was Dylan Scheel, who was streets ahead of most other players on the field, although Riley Bonner is just too good for VFL lists. He just keeps getting the ball and doing good things with it. So that
except when he doesn't do good things with it. He likes to bite off a fair bit and cough it up through the middle.
But he's so far ahead of everybody else that he he says, "Oh, don't worry, I'll do this."
Did you say just on him, George? I don't know if you watched it. I watched it after the guy interviewing. I have no idea who it is, but interviewed Bonner, and I think I heard him interviewing before. It basically said, you're too good to play. You want to get back to VFL. And Bonner batted it away and said he's got a development role, either at Casey or at the D's. I'm not sure which. And
I'm not sure what he had to go and pick up.
The NGAs, like
the
NGA, he's. I really enjoy watching him play.
He just keeps holding things together. It was interesting. I don't know what Taylor Whitford was doing, but he had Billings in the midfield for crying out loud in the first half, finally took him out and put Baldy into the midfield, and that's when we swung the ball back, the game back our way, because we started to get the ball again in the third quarter and were back in the game. Will Varell did all the rucking because Tom Campbell had some sort of injury.
That's probably exactly what Will needed, I reckon.
That's exactly, yeah, absolutely. It was interesting, the contest between him and their first game player, Monteith. They almost had matching statistics, but Will was really good, particularly in the headouts. And like I was saying before, this is the opportunity to put him in as a proper second ruck into the seniors. There's nothing to lose. So you could say, put Tom Campbell in, but, what are we going to get out of him next year, the year after? Varell's offering a much more opportunities.
Well, the first time, I think, George, just before you go, that's the first time I've thought, right, I reckon he might make it. Like he's a big lad growing in. If he can get fit and strong, I saw in Demoland quite an apt comparison, the some similarities to Grundy. And so if he is going to be that, if he's going to make it, he's got to get as fit as Grundy because he's not tall enough to and start clanging. But I really thought, spot on, I thought some of his tap work was first class.
Yeah. The other not bad ruckman that we saw was White, Jeff's son.
Skinny bugger.
He only put in a couple of cameos. They basically gave him a run in the last quarter, particularly for a decent length of time. As ruck. And there was one tap that he did to, I can't remember who it was. It was over the back.
Double-handed.
Straight onto their chest and let them run into the goal. And you go, what's Jeff White doing out on the field? Because for those people who saw Jeff play, he looks exactly like Jeff White, this kid, except he hasn't quite got the shoulders and the arms yet. But he kicks the same way.
Like
he runs the same way. He's an absolute clone of his father. So,
And taller. He might look like he's going to be a bit taller. And we didn't, I mean, it was interesting with Jeff White. We didn't talk about his career, but geez, what a fantastic player he was for Melbourne. What a just the start. Yeah.
The interesting ones for me were Ricky Mentor is starting to show some really, really promising signs. You know, the first half of this year, you know, he was barely sighted, looked like he didn't know where he was, whether he deserved to be in the side, but he's really starting to show some real sharpness. And if someone's going to be sort of our second string Cozzy in the forward line, I reckon
what
this
we
might
need.
Be, it's exactly we need it. What we need. Yeah, exactly. So,
and the other thing, George, that I really like about where Menth is at the moment, he's hitting packs at speed.
Yeah,
like, and he's hitting it and then coming out the other side of it, which he wasn't doing. And maybe that sort of speaks to what you're sort of suggesting around him being maybe a bit more confident that he belongs there. And I'm starting to see some signs.
Yeah, the other one was Jeffo, of course. Apart from kicking the goals, what really impressed me was 10 contested possessions. He was really putting in this game, 8 marks in the forward line. And, where before we were saying there was no second efforts and not going when he needed to go, he was certainly going in this game. And, again, if that's what we need in the forward line, and now is the opportunity to give him the chance. So, yeah, it was an interesting game, even just to see those players like Verrill and White and Jeffo showing something. I think
just on Jeffo, George, that's the Jefferson, that's the best I've seen him play full stop. And as you and I have both made the point any number of times, is it's that second effort and competitiveness that he's got to address to make it at AFL level. And he still doesn't look instinctive. But what I really, 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 really like is that he is really trying to do it. Whereas, I don't want to go back and knock Weed. It was never instinctive for Weed, but it was so instinctive that it looked like he. But he never seemed to me to really address that issue. And it's like, and it seems to me that that's clearly something that they've asked him to work on. And it looks like he's consciously trying every single time. So, you know, I thought he was excellent. It was really fascinating to hear Ben Brown talk about him, because he was basically said that he's been told to work on his physicality in the contest, halving contest. Ben Brown said what we were talking about last week, that really the key role of the forward is if you can't mark it, to bring it to ground. That's number one thing. But that they really have been working on Jefferson with his one-on-one contest. And so, one, I thought his competitiveness was, did you say a 10 contested possessions?
10 contested possessions.
That's terrific.
8 marks.
8 marks. But one of them was that's the thing is, one, he leads really well. He times his leads really well. But the other thing I really like about him is he's an old school crafty forward, and better than Jefferson at reading the drop of the ball. I mean, the best forwards know where the drop of the ball is and protect that. But he took a mark where he sort of wasn't really a shove, but he pushed 2 players under the contest for a mark directly in front of goal and took it out, you know, Jukes up in front of his eyes. And it was just wasn't strength. It was more about he caught both players off balance a little bit and was able to mark it. And it looked like it fell in his lap, but it didn't, because it was the work that he did to push them both in front of the contest. And I thought to myself, that's a real crafty forward move. And, yeah, on the back of that, I'd be pretty keen to see him in the ones too to get a real good look at him. The thing is now you've got to give JVR, like you said, you've got to leave him in the ones. You've got to leave Jefferson in the ones now. You know, I thought it was a bit weird, bring Colt in for a week and then you drop him. I mean, what's the message? What are you trying to do there? What's that about, you know?
Yeah, and then don't play him.
And no play, he didn't play in that game, did he? And nor did Seston. I'm not sure whether Seston really had a hamstring.
Still got a hamstring. And T-Mac was the other one who didn't play.
Yeah, right. So, you know, particularly Colt, why not play him, you know? Like, I would have rather him played than Viney, you know, maybe rest Viney for another week. Mm-hmm.
Oops, I was on mute. Well, I had flagged that we're not going to do any changes or previews for the. Well, obviously we've got the bye this week, but got Gold Coast coming up. We're not going to lose this week. But do you guys want to say anything about the Gold Coast game? Because we probably won't be doing a show until after that game. So I know I'd flagged we weren't doing that, but unless you want to say anything.
Nothing is too far away, too many variables. Yeah.
The only thing to say is that they play a very similar brand of footy to us, the two peas in a pod, Hardwick and Goodwin, in terms of their philosophy about footy. And there's a lot to like about the way they're travelling as well. I reckon we match up well against them. It'll be great to be honest, like leaving aside any of the other stuff and not wanting to leave that sort of the bye period on Dan. I think the season's not over. We've got a hell of a lot to play for, to set us up to go forward. It was the most exciting news. To be all honesty, I was the most excited I've been for, I can't begin to tell you how long, about footy was Cos re-signing. I was so excited about that. I reckon we're a good shot at getting Jackson as well. That's my vibe. We can make that happen. So there's a hell of a lot to play for. We could still make the finals if we get on a roll. That whole team needs a rest. And like, there was a bit of crabbiness between Petrarca and Oliver coming off. I think everyone needs a bye. You need a bye. We need a bye. But the young players too. We've got a lot of young players in that side. They're all bloody gasping for the break. So I'm really looking forward to that Brisbane game to see how we come out on the other side of it, fresh off a good break mentally, physically, and hopefully when we get back on the podcast, we're talking about a famous victory.
Now I'm off. I'm off this weekend to Adelaide with some mates, and I'm actually going to return to the scene of the crime. I'll be at Footy Park. No, it's not Footy Park. What's it called? Adelaide Oval, to watch Port Adelaide, Sydney. So hopefully I'll be cheering for Sydney.
Go the Bloods.
We're not going away specifically for that, but while we're there, we're going to take in that match. And then I'm off to the Gold Coast to get some sunshine.
And that game, you're seeing that game, huh?
That's why I'm going to the Gold Coast. I'm not going for a holiday. Although I will enjoy some warmer weather. It's freezing here. All right, well, that's where we're going to leave it for tonight. We'll be back in a fortnight to break down our round 16 match against the Suns. If you want to listen to that show live as it happens, head on over to demonland.com on that Monday night after that game at 8 p.m. Thank you to our 5-star reviewer on Apple Podcasts. That was Sweetly Sour, and thank you. As always, the questions and comments are an integral part of the show. So thank you to our Demonland posters who submitted questions and comments. Thank you to GoLordy, Pitmaster, Wells 11, Travi 14, Clintosaurus, Demon Cat, Lazy, Ross Millen, Track Forever, Bucknecked, Radish D, Doug Reamer, D's 1911, Witch's Hat, Roaster, SPC, Frankie D, El Diablo, 48 years now, and Spirit of Norm Smith. And also thank you to my co-host, George and B-Man. Thank you to you, our loyal listeners. Don't forget, leave us a 5-star review and a comment on my Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it out on next week's show. Oh, in 2 weeks. Go Demons.
Go Red Leggers. This feeling.